Welcome to the HDC Gamer Podcast, Episode 7. Good afternoon, evening, morning, whenever you're listening to this. This is Tim Pecoraro, your host, and we are going to talk about video games, like we always do. Difference today is that, just to let you know right off the bat, this podcast is probably going to be a bit shorter than you're used to, mostly because I've been busy, and things have been busy, and the industry, crazily enough, has not been all that busy. So, we're definitely in the Christmas non-rush as far as news is concerned. There have been a few things, but nothing too major to discuss. The major topic of this podcast is going to be about game reviews and how important they are or how not important they are. This is something that comes up every once in a while, but the difference here is that some recent events have changed the way that we look at these things. So, let's get right into it. Game reviews, by most people's standards, I think, are probably a guide to deciding whether or not they're going to buy a game or whether or not they're going to take an interest in the game. For me personally, somebody who writes game reviews, when I read a game review or when I see a video review, most of the time, I'm looking at it for two things. One thing is the quality of the review, because, well, I'm going to be writing one about the game, maybe, and I'd like to know, you know, how this person does it, and if there's any style or anything that I can use to help me do mine, like talking points, for instance. The other thing, which probably most of you out there look at when you hear or watch a game review, is the major things in it that make you feel like, wow, I really have to play that game. Well, this all makes sense, of course, but basically what people have been seeing over the last, I don't know, couple of years, is that people less and less do not... People more and more don't read game reviews. They simply look at the score. Scores aren't very good. Scores kind of tend to give you problems. Scores are controversial. For instance, Jeff Gerstmann, the other week, was fired over a game score. Yes, it's true. The managing editor of GameSpot, Jeff Gerstmann, who's been working at the site for over 10 years, was fired over his video review of Kane and Lynch and the score that he gave it. This sounds crazy, but when you look at it this way, Eidos, the company that makes Kane & Lynch, is giving a large amount of advertising to the site to the point where you could not, for a period of time, you could not even log into the site until you were done watching the skin be applied to the Kane & Lynch skin be applied to the site and part of the trailer run. So, perhaps this wasn't so crazy. CNET, the company that owns GameSpot, of course denies the fact that they fired Jeff over this, but the timing on this is just a little too coincidental that he does the review, he gets fired. Gerstmann himself does not comment on whether or not he was fired because of the review, but he certainly comments about his feelings. And while he is upset about what happened, he feels it's a clean break. and he'll be happy to work in game journalism again, being that he still has hope that game journalism is good and still has a lot of honest and truthful people working in it who won't cave to the pressure of advertisers. Which, of course, was evident when a group of game reviewers from 1UP went and picketed outside of CNET, showing their support for Jeff. This was a wonderful thing, and I was happy to see it. But this is a side effect of what's been going on for quite a while. And that is, review scores have become king. The problem with this, of course, is that when questioned about review scores, most reviewers downplay their importance. Which basically means that the thing that is making the most waves and getting the most attention is not the thing that reviewers are taking the most time in thinking of. Reviewers tend to downplay a score, like if a game got a 7 or an 8. Most of the time the reviewer would say, well, hey, that's a good score. That game isn't bad. Unfortunately, most customers or consumers will look at that 7 and go, well, that's not a very good game. Or look at that 8 and say, well, it might have gotten an 8, but I've played 8 games before, and they're not very good. I'm going to wait until I can play a game that's a 9. I'm using the 1 out of 10, the 1 to 10 rating system, just in case you were wondering. So, this is all alright, I suppose, until you start getting into areas of, for instance, let's say Need for Speed Pro Street gets an 8, and Forza Motorsport 2 gets a 9. Well, you'll ask the reviewer, so that means that Need for Speed Pro Street isn't as good as Forza Motorsport 2. And they'll say, well, sort of. They're very different games. Or, if you compare something like this, let's say Rock Band gets a 9, Halo 3 gets a 10. Halo 3 is a better game than Rock Band? Well, no, the game reviewer will say. They're two different games. They would be very hard to compare them. Oh, alright. Then what are the scores good for? Nothing, really. Perhaps the same game in the same genre may be comparable using those scores, but over the whole console, or over the whole genre, against another genre, the scores are meaningless. At least that's what game reviewers say. Myself, I try to make scores that are both meaningful over the games in the genre, and somewhat other games. But mostly, I concentrate on the genre. If I give Halo 3 a 10, and then I give Blacksite Area 51 a 7, I mean Halo 3 is not as good as Blacksite Area 51. That's the reason why I did that. That's why I gave it that score. I try to have an intelligent review to back up the score as evidence of the score, which some reviewers don't feel the need to do. I think that that's wrong. If you give a game a 10, you better have some good reasons. Just the same, if you give a game a 1 or a 3, you better have good reasons. It's not enough to give the game a 7 or 8, or even a 9, and write a paragraph for your game review, and expect that's going to be enough. Most people reading it will come away disappointed, upset, or feeling shorted. Why is this? Well, it's pretty obvious. That's why written reviews are so important. Video reviews are good in some ways. They're fun to watch. They're short. and many times can give you a better idea of what the game's like than reading a review. Because screenshots can only tell you so much. It's sort of advertising, in its own way. The problem with video reviews is that they are short. Very short in some cases. IGN tends to make extremely short video reviews, while GameTrailers.com tends to make very long ones. GameTrailers has a tendency of repeating themselves in their video reviews, but they have enough time that repeating isn't that bad. It's not that big of a deal. On the other hand, IGN has this tendency of saying so little that sometimes the review doesn't have quite the veracity that it should. Now, where does GameStop fall in all this? Well, historically, GameSpot's had some pretty decent video reviews, but this time of the year, when things are crazy and reviewers don't have the kind of time to review the games like they normally do, their reviews can run a little short as well. For instance, Unreal Tournament 3 had a very short video review from GameSpot and IGN. So short, in fact, that they both neglected to mention the Warzone mode, which is the major new addition for the game, for the title, and downplayed most of the big additions. This was all in the PC version, of course. Perhaps they're thinking that they're going to get another bite at the apple when the PS3 version comes out in just a couple weeks. Perhaps that's the point. That way they don't have to do a big review for the PC. They can wait and do it for the PS3, thinking that a greater part of their audience is going to be playing the PS3 version. This is possible, except that IGN is a partner with DirectDrive, which is a PC delivery system, and Unreal Tournament 3 is their top game right now. So for advertising's sake, if nothing else, I think they would want to make their video review as long as possible. What am I saying? They should cater to a retail place to advertise something? No, I'm not saying that they should change the review. I'm saying they should make the review longer and more detailed to make their advertising partner happier. It's not so much that I think they should change the review as far as whether the game got an 8, a 9, or a 10. I'm saying that the review should be longer and have more detail. This much, I think, reviewers should be able to cater to PR and publishers. Make the reviews nice and long. If the game sucks, explain why. It's not that big of a deal. Most games are around 60 hours. 60 hours? No. How about 6 hours? There you go. How about most games are between 6 and 10 hours. Some games are as long as 20 hours. You would think in all that time, you would have something more to say than, well, the graphics aren't very good, sounds great, and the gameplay could be better. But these are the kind of things that I read in magazines, mostly, when you don't even have a full-page review of a game. You wonder if the reviewer actually played the whole game. Most people say that they have played the whole game when they write those reviews. Some say they haven't, but most of the people who haven't don't write for major publications. If you're getting paid big bucks, or at least more than most people get paid in this industry, you should be playing the whole game. It's just for the sake of, you know, full disclosure. After all, if I was a movie reviewer and only watched a half hour of every movie and then reviewed it, I don't think I'd have my job very long. When I do this, however, and I want you all to realize this, that when I do put a review on the blog, 9 times out of 10, I have not finished the game. It's usually for a reason. The game's too frustrating, perhaps. Or maybe the game's just so bad that I couldn't sit through it. Sitting through a really bad movie for 2 hours is one thing. Sitting through a really bad game for 20, now that's torture. Torture that I'm not getting paid for. So when the checks start rolling in, I promise I'll play the whole game. Or better yet, when I start getting the games for free, then I'll play the whole game. Until then, sorry. Anyway, getting back to review scores. So are review scores necessary then? I mean, they seem arbitrary. I just explained why they were. So should we just get rid of them? Well, the old Games for Windows, the predecessor to Games for Windows, Computer Gaming Monthly, tried to do just that. It was an evolutionary step, and some people felt it was revolutionary. The magazine dropped their review scores completely, and boy was everybody mad. It was amazing. It was as if they had started putting porno in their, gay porno, I should say, in their magazine. Everybody got angry. They sent them nasty letters. They were on their forums telling them that, you know, why the heck did you take away our review scores? Nobody wants to read the whole review. And some people felt that even after reading the whole review, they would like a score to really explain what they just read. Sounds like reader comprehension needs some work. Oh well. When Computer Gaming Monthly switched back to Games for Windows, not switched back, but switched to Games for Windows, being a partner with Microsoft, which isn't as big of a deal as it sounds. After all, the Microsoft operating system runs just about every game, PC game out there. They turned down their review scores again. It was kind of unfortunate, but it happened. The level of writing didn't change. Obviously, they are one of the best written magazines out there. And certainly their reviews are some of the most lengthy and detailed in the industry. But is anybody reading them now? Now that there are scores? I don't know. I'm sure there's a percentage of people who are reading them. But sometimes when you hear comments people make about this game or that game or whatever score that a certain site gave it, you wonder if the person did read the review. And sometimes in comments, under comments on websites, under a particular game, which some sites like GameSpot and 1UP allow you to do, the comments kind of bear the fruit of people not reading the review. They'll pick on something or other, and somebody else will say, well, did you read the review, idiot? They said this or that. So, perhaps this is a problem. In fact, everybody knows it's a problem. The editor of Team Xbox, at one point last year, put a rant up on his website, saying that nobody reads the reviews, they're just looking at the scores and how mad he is about it. It was kind of a funny thing in the sense that he was complaining about something that really didn't affect him at all. He's not a publisher, he's not a developer. Why is he complaining? What difference does it make? Well, I guess he feels he should get his work should be recognized. And it wasn't being recognized because nobody was bothering to read it. Other people would say, well, he's getting paid. How much more does he want? And I suppose in that way, it's true. But as a writer, you always hope people read your work. And hopefully, you write in an area where people want to read it. That's probably what he meant. So, what's the verdict? Am I going to drop review scores for my reviews so that you all have to read the reviews? Well, no, not really. I've kind of found a way to balance it. I try not to make the review score so important. I don't post it anyplace else except in the review, which is a trick a lot of people use. But I do have to say this. If you don't read my review, most of the time you're missing something interesting about the game. The reason I give it a high score or a low score, normally, has something to do with the game, as far as some particular points. And of course, since I've been podcasting, I've been doing some reviews on here, which seems to be working all right. Although, having the physical review in front of me seems like a much more fulfilling prospect. However, because of my lack of time, it seems to be working out a little bit better here. At least I don't have to do any editing for grammar, punctuation, or spelling. The content on these reviews is a little short, which I'm hoping to rectify in the future. And probably I'll be doing another two or three this way. But you'll see some actual written reviews in the near future. Because after all, can't keep away from them forever. And if a game is too detailed, or has too many talking points, I'm not going to want to wax on poetic about it for more than an hour and hope that my listeners stay with me. It's just not something I can imagine. I would do it. Personally, I would listen to it. In fact, one of my podcasting idols, Stephen Glicker, would often wax poetic about a game for more than an hour, and everybody would love it. But I don't know if it was his voice, his sense of humor, or the way he did it. I'm not sure. But it never seemed boring to me. But I'm afraid that if I did it, everybody would be bored. So, that's not going to happen. Alright, what happened this week? Well, not all that much. The Jeff Gerstmann issue, of course. And then the merger between Activision and Blizzard. Yes, that's true. Activision and Blizzard merged. This was a major deal, and a lot of people are a little upset about it. Why? Well, Activision doesn't have the best track record in the world. They are a pretty big maker of casual games, a big publisher of casual games, that is, which do make a lot of money. But as far as the hardcore, they're not very reputable, and they make some bad decisions. After all, we can all remember Call of Duty 3. With this merger, they've announced two games, well actually three, already in development. Call of Duty 5, Guitar Hero 4, and Tony Hawk 11. Now, there's no word as to who is making Call of Duty 5, and the fact that Infinity Ward is fresh off of making Call of Duty 4, it's hard to imagine that they're making it. However, there's also no release date announced, which means to me that these games might be still in the planning process, which is good, because both games, Call of Duty 4 and Guitar Hero 3, both have tons of downloadable content in their future. At least that's what we were led to believe. Also, coming out with these games too quickly would sour both franchises. Take a look at the blog, thehadestimes.blogspot.com, for more information on the merger and my opinions about why these games shouldn't come out so soon. Other than that, not a lot has come out. We are in the drought of information right before the floodgates open for next year. There's certainly plenty of games coming out in the beginning of the year if you've taken a look at GameStop, or Gamefly, or any of your local video game retailer websites. These games include big titles like Burnout Paradise, Mercenaries 2, Dark Sector, Super Smash Bros. Brawl, and many others. These games were delayed out of this year and pushed into next. Hopefully, they'll be worth it. Games like Haze hopefully had some more development time and polishing time to make them excellent. The problem is that it's still a first-person shooter, and first-person shooters have become the crown jewel of console games. Very few places are going to be able to make a decent first-person shooter nowadays. With Halo 3, BioShock, and Unreal Tournament 3, and of course, on the PC, Crysis, and let's not forget Call of Duty 4 by Infinity Ward. It's going to be pretty difficult for anybody to make a decent first-person shooter and not get compared to these. The comparisons could be deadly. These games are the best first-person shooters out there. And if you're a first-person shooter fan, go out and pick one of those up. Nothing's going to happen next year to change this, I don't think. Certainly there's a few games with interesting concepts, but I don't think that they're going to break any game mechanic molds or shock us in some way. Games like Fracture, Haze, and The Club all have interesting ideas, but I don't think any of them are going to make the kind of impact that BioShock and Halo 3 made earlier this year. First-person shooters are going to be held to a standard that is so high that it's going to cost most companies an arm and a leg, and maybe more, to get their game to be better. Games are going to be expected to have experience progression, saved films, kick-ass multiplayer. Oh yes, and that single player of your first-person shooter, it better be deep, and it better have a story, or you can just forget about it. Yeah, these things are just crazy, and it's probably making developers pull their hair out as we speak. Nobody wants to go up against the big boys, but then that's the industry. It's kind of like coming out with a football game. You can't have the NFL license, you can't have the years of trial and error that Madden's had, so you just throw it all together and hope for the best. And normally, you lose big time. Just ask the folks who made All-Pro Football, which, advertising-wise, is still hanging in there. Shelf-wise, I doubt that there's even any on the shelf. It's probably gone to $29.99 by now. Alright, well, this has been a very short podcast, but I figured I needed to come up with something. Unfortunately, between the news, having such a lack of stuff, and game releases being kind of slow now after they've all come out, seemed kind of short. So, just to round out the end of this, and because I promised you folks that I would do this, I'm going to have a quick holiday guide for you guys. What do you want to buy for the holidays? What's good? Well, first and foremost, don't go out and buy any magazines that have holiday guides in them. They're horrible. They want you to buy $300 air guitars and $200 companion cubes, and you know, I don't know where they get this stuff from, but I guess it's probably sent to them for free, and they feel that they have to put in a holiday guide. Anyway. I'm going to go through the games, because after all, that's what gamers want. Games. For the PC, if your PC will run it, pick up Crysis. It's a good first-person shooter. It has a shallow multiplayer, but the single player will probably keep you busy for hours. Hellgate London. Pick that up. It's an awesome game, and I don't care what anybody says. You will be addicted to it. Especially if your PC will run DX10. You will be ready, willing, and able to keep going back as much as you possibly can. It's especially if you don't have a lot of other games on the fire right now. A suggestion that's good for all seasons, World of Warcraft. Pick up World of Warcraft. If you haven't played it already, you can play for free for about 15 days. See if you get hooked, see if you like it. If you don't like it, well, stop. The trial is the trial. It's very it's a short trial, but it's just long enough for you to get an idea of whether this is something you really want to try. Tabula Rasa. A lot of people have said that it's one of the best new massively multiplayer online games out there. With its science fiction style and its somewhat different gameplay than World of Warcraft, you'll be at least mildly interested in playing this game for a while. Can you play Tabula Rasa alone? Well, that's yet to be seen. You can probably play it with the people on your server, as long as you choose the right side, and as long as you are kind of a team player. You'll be okay. What else is out there for the PC? Not a heck of a lot. Some of the games that I was expecting to be really thrilled about at this point this year are pushed up into next year. So see if you can wait till next year. There's going to be a lot of good stuff. Right now, we're kind of on hold. Alright. So, well, and of course, if you haven't played Gears of War yet, pick up the Gears of War for the PC. How you could not have picked this up yet, I don't know. If your PC will run it, if your PC will run DX10, it is a must-buy. Alright. Now we're going to go into the Xbox 360. The Xbox 360 has tons and tons of games, probably more than any other console out there right now. There's a lot of good games. Just to name a few, BioShock, Halo 3, Rock Band, Guitar Hero 3, Guitar Hero 2, Mass Effect, and for racing games, Forza Motorsport 2, Dirt, these are excellent games. Need for Speed Pro Street has gotten mixed reviews, and I wouldn't recommend it to anyone necessarily. I have not played it yet. Same thing with Assassin's Creed, I have not played it yet. Both have gotten mixed reviews, but they are good reviews. If you can rent them, do. PlayStation 3. The PlayStation 3 is a small catalog, but there are some good games in that catalog. If you haven't played it yet, MotorStorm, Virtua Fighter 5, Tekken 5, Dark Resurrection, it's now online, Drake's Fortune, good game. Ratchet and Clank, Tools of Destruction, my pick for Platformer of the Year. Heavenly Sword, rent it, don't buy it, it's a short game. That's basically it. Of course, there's Rock Band and Guitar Hero 3 on PlayStation 3 as well. If you do not have these games for your Xbox 360, or you do not have Xbox 360, I would recommend picking one of them up, at least, for your PlayStation 3. Next, of course, is the Wii. Now, everybody knows who listens to this podcast or reads my websites that I'm kind of down on the Wii. For the Wii, I would suggest Super Mario Galaxy, Metroid, the new Metroid, Super Mario Strikers Charged, that's the soccer game, and I would probably suggest Resident Evil Umbrella Chronicles, if you like shooters, you know, like Lakeland games, and also Ghost Squad, which has gotten relatively good reviews considering it's a shooter. It's a light gun game, I mean. Not much there. I know that there's people who are probably screaming at their iPods or their MP3 players right now, saying that there's so many more games and I'm not giving it good enough play. Sorry, guys. I'm still waiting for Super Smash Bros. Brawl, which comes out in February. Maybe. For the DS, there's tons of games. I don't play enough DS to suggest anything, but my favorite game for the DS so far has been Zelda Phantom Hourglass and Puzzle Quest. Same thing on the PSP. I have not played hardly any PSP, so please don't take my word for it. But I would recommend Puzzle Quest again. And probably Star Wars Battlefront, the brand new one. That looks like an incredible game. And it's gotten pretty good reviews, so I would suggest picking that up if you have the money and the time, and you have a PSP. Alright. And I think that covers it. Yeah. Wow, that was fast. Well, guys, and girls, who's ever out there, this is going to be probably my shortest podcast to date. But we will have a podcast next week. Don't ask me what it's about, because I don't know. The news and events and everything else will shape it. We might have a review on next week's show. I'm not sure. It depends on how quickly I get through games and how much time I have. So we'll see what happens. I'm going to get back to work, as I'm sure you guys have to get back to work, because that's the way life is. And it's the holiday season, so you're working for presents, which is always different than working for paying your gas bill or something. So, thank you for listening. I've been Timothy Pecoraro, and I will be Timothy Pecoraro. And I hope to have you all come back and listen to me ramble and rant on again. I hope you enjoyed today's show. Hope you're not too upset that it's so short. But, you know, it's only maybe 10 minutes shorter than the shortest show I've had. In fact, probably only 20 minutes shorter than the average show I've had. So, don't worry about it. We'll be fine. You'll see. Next week will be longer. And if nothing else, by the end of the month, we'll have another exciting episode of Newsstand. And that is always a longer show. So, can't wait to get back and do all the wonderful things. Are you guys playing Mass Effect? I am. You guys playing Rock Band? I am. Yeah, that's why I'm not doing anything else. Thanks, everybody. And I'm out.